The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a great Monday. Thanks for being with us. A weekend filled with March Madness. A weekend filled with, I did some football. We'll talk about that with the Hot Shots. And the NFL owners are meeting at the Biltmore. C.J. Holmes is going to be with us today from The Athletic. I like C.J. C.J. Went to Auburn and played basketball. C.J. wrote on his Twitter feed about the joke that is the NCAA with their commercials last week about the life of an NCAA athlete. And C.J. was very pointed in this. And I want to have C.J. on about his beloved Auburn Tigers, but also the whole idea that the NCAA is all about the kids. He is also out at the NFL owners meetings. And I think of the writers that I met with The Athletic, and I've met most of them, or I know most of them. CJ is one that has kind of flown under the radar here in Arizona, and I think has a terrific amount of talent in front of him. So we're going to have CJ on for the first time, and that'll come up at 10:20 on a lot of things. Very interested to hear what he has to say. When we left you last, Arizona State was trying to advance. Whew, what a train wreck that was. That was on Friday. So we will get into that, what is going on at the owners' meetings, and the Suns, whether they should look at Ja or Zion. Ja or Zion. I've got some thoughts on that front. Our opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. And that is with life insurance. That is with annuities. That is with taking a look at your personal situation and saying, if I did not come home tonight, would everything be handled? Would everything be in place for my family to move on without me? Last time I checked, none of us get out of here alive. So you got to look at this and say, you know what? As much as a morbid topic this is, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to address it. Really grow up. Be mature about it because it's coming. All right? That's enough of me hitting you between the eyes. Go to Sagicor Now. Log on. Get your free quote. I'm not there over your shoulder. Just do it yourself. Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. CJ Holmes here in a few minutes. All right, so Bobby Hurley's going to get pursued by somebody. Dan Majerle, I think, is going to get pursued by somebody. We're at a point now where our state is empty. Everybody's out. Not that there was a great run expected this year in the NCAA tournament, but if we were to just bring it right down to our level to really look at the three programs within the state, I think there's going to be a coaching change at NAU at some point. Could be wrong. U of A, it's really interesting to me to see what has happened at Alabama. The last time I checked, Greg Byrne is the AD there, and they're buying Avery Johnson out. Last time I checked, Sean Miller is real close with Greg Byrne. However, when the word subpoena is thrown out, that's kind of a hard one to overcome. So perhaps the timing isn't right, but a guy like Greg Byrne, I will never put it past him. He is somebody that may look and pull the curtain back and say, you know, I can go get Sean Miller right now. He's going to go testify and he's going to be cleared of everything. And I can snatch him out of Tucson because unless they write him a big check, he's not going anywhere, even though I personally don't agree with that. I think Sean should be gone, but that's me. I think starting over, pushing reset, you can go through all you want, U of A fans, about, well, we've got Nico Mannion coming, and we've got this recruit coming, and that recruit coming. And guess what? Those guys are typically one and dones. And your program does not have a whole lot left on the shelf. And your program, if I'm to believe what's out there in the recruiting worlds, is going to lose some players here in the next few weeks. So Greg Byrne pursuing Sean Miller, would that make sense to me? Sure, it would. The fact that Alabama is opening up their coaching jobs so quickly, does that make sense to me? Yes, it does. In terms of Bobby, so we had Doug Haller on a couple weeks ago, and Doug alluded to the fact that there was a school that pursued Bobby last year. I was not aware of the school. In further conversation, it was a school that was back east. It was a school that at one time was a pretty big time program, but now is kind of middle of the road. I think what Bobby's done is he's moved the needle on the fact of Arizona State is one of the most difficult jobs. It's not a bad job. Okay, there's some bad elements to it, or there have been bad elements to it. The bad elements are that the building is still a dump. It is still a hole. It doesn't matter how anybody tries to explain to me differently. It's not good. Bobby Hurley is coaching in a conference where most of his games cannot be seen. That's not good. And I'm not, you know, let's just be straight on this. Pac-12 Network, you're trying to recruit a kid across the country and say, hey, come here. And yeah, we're in Minnesota, we're in Chicago, we're here, we're there. And you can't see our games. That's a negative for Bobby Hurley. I think when Bobby Hurley went after the student section earlier this year, which was interesting, just the way he went about it. It's, come on, guys, I'm from Duke. I get big rabid fan sections. We don't have it here. It may never be the case at Arizona State. I don't think Arizona State basketball will ever be GCU basketball in terms of fan interest. The GCU fan experience is much better than the ASU fan experience for many, many reasons. Is it getting better on campus? Sure it is. But if you're Bobby Hurley, you've done a lot here. You've increased attendance to where they are. They've gone from a 5,000, 8,000 program to north of 10,000. He is slowly ramping it up. Yes, part of that had to do with the Kansas game here this season. I understand that. But Bobby has shown that he's not afraid to play anybody. The downside is his teams have been very erratic. The game on Friday was just dreadful. It was painful to watch on so many fronts. Buffalo was so much better than Arizona State. And Eric, did you see the game? Did you watch any of ASU on Friday?
I did. I wrote about it for the site. Good to see you're paying attention to these things.
What'd you write about it?
It wasn't good.
Yeah?
It wasn't close.
Yeah?
It wasn't competitive. One team was much better than the other. One team was tired. And pretty much what I expected is what happened.
One team was tired.
Yeah, one team was tired.
And why were they tired?
Well, they got in at 4 in the morning.
But why were they in at 4 in the morning? Because they had to play.
Because they lost to Princeton at home.
Yeah.
And because they lost to Washington State at home.
Yes.
And because they had other questionable losses.
Well, you know, you look at the Pac-12 tournament, and you and I were there. Why? You weren't at the Oregon game.
I was
there. But it was an overtime game, and now Oregon's all the way into the Sweet 16. I can't say that I'm surprised. I mean, I looked at Oregon's roster top to bottom. I wouldn't say it's infinitely better than ASU's, but Dana Altman just finds ways to get his team motivated into the next round. That's just who he is.
And they're playing without their best player, who's going to be playing the NBA next year. So
yeah,
kudos to Oregon. Yep.
Now, so could you see, like, let me back up to you on this. Was this a great year for Arizona State basketball?
No.
So they make the tournament for the first time since 2009.
Yep.
They win a play-in game or a first four game, however you want to term it. It's they got in and they played a game.
Yep.
They won.
They did. Great is a word that I don't like to throw out.
Was it a good season?
It was a very good season.
Very good. So you're putting very in front of them.
If they were playing this weekend, it would have been a great season. But they are building something. There is progress. Each year, they are taking that next step.
Okay, so what I would say to you on that is, Zylan Cheatham is gone.
He is.
Dort's probably gone.
Maybe.
Dort's probably gone.
He shouldn't.
He shouldn't.
Maybe.
But Dort's probably gone.
Unless you are hearing something by saying that.
Dort's probably gone.
Okay. I'll play along.
So
I get it.
So, you know, you look at it and say,
they're very young, though, Brad. They're and again, I can only look at this roster, and I read what you wrote. Yeah, the evolution of change in college basketball has never been more prevalent than it is right now.
Yeah.
But it's not like the Pac-12's great, number one. Number two, if those players return, yes, losing Zylan Cheatham is going to be a huge loss.
Yeah.
But everyone else returns. On paper, everyone else returns.
So, okay. I'll play along with you on that.
Okay.
I think Romello White is developing to a very good low post player.
No doubt.
I think he's developing into somebody that could be what Cheatham was in terms of leadership.
I agree.
I see how he handles himself. Okay. I think Cherry is someone who's very immature. And I could see Cherry, even though he put on social, you know, what a great season, all that nonsense. I could totally see Cherry saying, I'm gone.
I agree.
I'll go somewhere else. So, and Bobby's had that happen to him. It happens to every coach. I get it.
You failed to mention the best player on the team. So the best player on the team is the point guard. He's going to be a junior.
He's not a point guard. Remy's decision-making in the St. John's game was not good.
He was hurt.
He was hurt, but hurt does not say, okay, I'm going to make a bad pass here. Hurt, court awareness, it's one thing if you can't slide. It's one thing if you can't run your offense. It's completely another when you're just making bad decisions and poor shot selection. And I'm not going to go down the path for me of, well, he was hurt and that's why he couldn't shoot. No, his decision-making at times wasn't good.
I can't disagree with you on that, but I still think he's the best player on the team.
Okay, so they have three guards coming in. Two of them are point guards next season, supposedly. So then I'm going to hear about, well, they're just freshmen. We have to roll with this. And then Romello will be gone. And it's like this endless cycle. To me, if Rob Edwards shoots straight, that's where this team missed it. He was 2 of 16.
Yep.
So if Rob Edwards, and I like him. I mean, I really, really like him. If Remy's healthy and Rob Edwards shoots straight, do they still beat Buffalo? No. They weren't deep enough to beat Buffalo.
Rob Edwards is just kind of a hired gun.
Like, yeah,
If you look at the box score, Rob Edwards could score 20 points, but he might grab two rebounds and maybe get a couple of assists. If you look look at Remy Martin, when Remy Martin's on, he's going to put up 20. He's probably going to dish out 10 assists. He's probably going to grab five steals, and he's probably going to grab six rebounds.
When he's on.
And he was on more than he was off last year.
But how did they miss the tournament? Princeton, Washington State, and in those games, he wasn't good.
I get it.
I guess what I'm looking at it with Bobby is, would you pursue Bobby Hurley if you had an opening?
Of course.
Has he done enough? Yeah.
And if I'm Bobby Hurley, I'd look.
Yeah, I mean, he's taken this about as far as anybody could take this job. Unless Ray can't do everything over there. Until the wrecking ball hits that building, it's not going to be the job that it could be. That building is a detriment. The Pac-12 network is a detriment. Bobby has overcome that. Ray has overcome that. The people that are there have overcome it, but it's still, has he run this as far as he can go? Jason Kidd's supposedly going to be the next coach at Cal, too. So the conference, who knows? I mean, Cal blew out their guy, and Jason's name's now out there. C.J. Holmes is next. C.J. was at Auburn. Played. Now his team's in the tournament with The Athletic. He has some very strong thoughts, at least on Twitter. I don't know if he's going to share them with me here. I'm going to push him on it. And also, he's at the NFL owners meeting. So we'll talk with C.J. Holmes. That is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. So about, I'd say, 6-7 months ago, I'm out at the Cardinals, and I notice a face I had not recognized before, that I had not visited with before, and I went over and chatted with C.J. Holmes, the next face that you're going to see as he Skypes in from the NFL owners meetings, and I really like his work, really like his work ethic. He is with The Athletic here in Arizona. C.J. is at the NFL owners meetings at the Biltmore, but the only hang-up I have with C.J. is he's an Auburn guy. Kind of like when we have Charles on the air, that you know what's going to happen. It's just going to be a bunch of Auburn nonsense. So I'm going to try to keep this conversation on the straight and narrow. How are you, CJ?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing great. Thank you for coming on. Let's start with the tournament. And I want to start with, let's just get the Auburn nonsense out of the way. You played at Auburn. Give the people the backstory on your Auburn time.
I was a walk-on at Auburn University from 2012 to 2015. My last year on the team, we won three games in 3 days in the SEC tournament. Ended up running into the buzzsaw that was the 2015 Kentucky Wildcats, arguably the greatest team ever assembled not to win a championship. But I would like to think that my Auburn team's laid the foundation for what's going on right now. So it's really cool to see our program having some success.
What records do you currently hold at Auburn that people are going to smash and run right through?
Technically, if you want to get real technical.
Yeah, please.
I'm 3 for 3 in my career from the floor. So technically, wow. I have the highest field goal percentage in school history. But I'm joking, of course.
Now, if Charles were in on this conversation, he would say, how much were you paid when you were at Auburn? Because that's just how he goes and rolls. In all seriousness, it sounds like you had a good experience there playing basketball. Did you play any other sports at Auburn?
No, I did some intramural ultimate frisbee, but yeah. Outside of that, stuck to hoops.
Nice, nice. So you transitioned from Auburn into media. You're with The Athletic now. Why don't you just let everybody know what you're doing at The Athletic? Because I think you do great work, but you're all over the place doing things.
I am the general assignment writer out here for The Athletic Arizona. So they got me bouncing all over the place. I'm actually sitting outside the Arizona Biltmore right now at the NFL owners meetings. I'm not sure how much I'm going to write off of this, but it's good to kind of get out here and experience this. A lot of high profile faces are actually walking by me as we speak. So it's actually pretty cool to see that. But outside of that, I have my hand in Cardinals coverage, Suns coverage, Arizona State. And they actually sent me out to spring training a couple weeks ago, which was interesting because I had never covered baseball in my life.
Yeah.
So that was a fun experience. They got me doing a little bit of everything out here, and I love it.
What's your preference?
As far as covering things,
yeah,
it's kind of weird because I played basketball my entire life. But, you know, when I was at Auburn, I also wrote for my school paper. And, you know, obviously I couldn't cover hoops. So I covered a lot of football. So, you know, if I had to put it in order of things I like to cover, I'd say football because I'm the most familiar with covering football. Covered a lot of football at the school paper in college, then hoops. And then everything else. I actually like covering soccer more than I like covering baseball.
Wow, that says something. We're talking with CJ Holmes from The Athletic. If you were to talk about Auburn, Alabama football versus any other sporting event, is there nothing close to Auburn, Alabama that you've covered?
I don't think so. I mean, we're talking Auburn, Alabama. It's the biggest rivalry in all of sports, in my opinion. Every time those two teams are about to get together in any sport, whether it's basketball and football, there's a lot of buzz around the city of Auburn and in Tuscaloosa. It's just like not really anything like that. I was in the house for the Kick Six back in 2014, 15, I want to say. Or was it 13? It was 13. That's the year we went to national championship. And just being there, I actually didn't cover the game for the school paper that day. I was in the stands, so I got to rush the field, and it was just an amazing experience. And it's funny because my sister and all of her free time actually took the time to find me on the field because I was wearing a gray beanie. So she took time out of her day to find me on the field covered with thousands of people, and she sent me a picture on my phone. So I thought that was pretty funny at the time.
That's cool. CJ Holmes with us from the NFL owners meetings from The Athletic. All right, at the owners meetings, let's dial in here. What is it that you see so far, and what are your expectations the next couple of days of what news may or may not happen out of the Biltmore, CJ?
Well, I've only been here about an hour or so. There's been meetings going on throughout the mornings. There'll be more that will go on throughout the afternoon. So far, it's pretty quiet. Lots of journalists just walking around, kind of chatting with each other. As far as big news breaking, I'm not really expecting much. I don't think any of the journalists are expecting much news to come out of this. But, you know, when all the owners get together like this, you know, hopefully, you know, some of the big issues that are going on in the NFL this year, as far as rule changes and changes we'd like to see in the game, hopefully some of that will be addressed this week.
CJ Holmes from The Athletic with us at the Biltmore. When you look towards the draft and you're in that locker room, you've been around the organization, what's your gut tell you today as we talk about number one and the direction that they're going?
My gut's telling me they're going Kyler Murray. I think you have to at this point. I think Kyler Murray is, you know, players like him don't come around very often. You know, his combination of explosiveness and arm strength, and he can get it done on the ground, and his accuracy. Players like that don't come around very often. And you have an Arizona Cardinals franchise that's in desperate need of an infusion of, you know, youth and talent and, you know, just life. And I think if you bring a guy like that into your locker room, that's going to put fans into that stadium on game day. And that's what this team desperately needs right now. You know, outside the number one pick, I think the Cardinals need to – it doesn't matter who's that quarterback. He doesn't have any weapons to throw to, right? You know, the Arizona Cardinals receiving core was among the worst in the NFL last year. I'd like to see them maybe at pick 33 go after a wide receiver. Maybe ASU's N'Keal Harry I think would be a good fit. Or, you know, anyone that could provide some depth on the defensive line. Marcus Golden signing that free agent contract with the Jets. Chandler Jones can't do it by himself. They need all the help they can get. So as far as the draft, I think you go Murray at one, get him some receiver help at 33, or get some depth along that defensive line.
CJ, there's been a narrative out there from some NFL people that I've had on the show that the Cardinals should draft Murray, keep Rosen. Do you see any scenario where that takes place? And the thought is, you already are on the hook for the money, and you don't know in this day and age of injury, Murray's not the most stout guy. You have a competition. Do you buy into that? Do you think the organization would buy into keeping both Rosen and drafting Murray?
I mean, it could happen. I mean, look at the Redskins back in 2012. You draft RG3 first overall. Then you go out and get Kirk Cousins. I'm not sure if he's a third or fourth round pick. It's a little bit of a different scenario with them because both quarterbacks were taken in the same draft. But look how that played out years later. RG3 was no longer there. Kirk Cousins went on to smash all sorts of passing records for the Redskins before moving on with the Vikings. It was a good insurance policy. But at the same time, I don't see that scenario unfolding with the Cardinals. Josh Rosen comes across as someone who wants to play now, and he is talented enough to play now. And, you know, the Cardinals taking Murray is just a preference in the direction they want the franchise to go. I don't see a scenario where Rosen will be wanting to play hardball, you know, sit behind Murray and, you know, be a good teammate and things along that nature. Josh is a good guy, but he wants to play now. And I think it'd be best for both Josh and the organization if they can just find a way to trade him on draft day if they do go the Kyler Murray route.
It's interesting, too, to see if they make the pick of Murray and it doesn't work out, organization is set back miles. You pass on Murray and he kills it, organization is second-guessed all the way through. You trade out of number one and trade down two or three slots, get extra players to your point that they have holes on this team. I actually think, CJ, that's the better way for them to go out of all this, but then I'm trusting Josh Rosen. Of all the scenarios, what do you personally think makes the most sense with number one?
Me, just personally, yeah. I think you draft Kyler Murray. I think you got to draft Kyler Murray. I think guys like him don't come around very often. Like I said, the Cardinals, they need life. Organization needs life. They need excitement. And how better to do that than to bring in the most exciting player in college football from a year ago?
Before I get you out of here, you wrote a little bit on social about Auburn and the NCAA messaging that they had this last week of the life of a student athlete. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Walk me through that, because your perspective was, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but it was like, this is a joke what you guys are sending out there. Am I right? Am I putting it in right perspective of what you wrote, right context?
Yeah, it is a joke. And it's like, I hate the NCAA. You know, I got to play college basketball and I was thankful for that experience. But at the same time, you know, a lot of people look at student athletes and think, oh, they have it made. They're playing on national television. Oh, they get backpacks and gear. And yeah, we do get that, and it's nice, but it's a lot of hard work, too. It's early mornings. It's late nights. It's forgetting to eat sometimes. It's grinding. It's not being able to sleep at night. It's walking around campus sore. It's, you know, making sacrifices. It's not being able to see your girlfriend after practice because you got to go to study hall. It's just so much that goes into it, and I just do not think that day in the life of a student-athlete commercial really encompassed, you know, what we went through on a daily basis. And I think as far as, you know, prospective student athletes, if you want people to come play for your program, right? If you want people to come play for your organization, you know, like the NCAA sports, you got to tell these kids, you got to be upfront with these kids. People want to buy into a brand that is authentic, a brand that's genuine, something that they can trust in. And I just think that commercial, they're just lying to all these prospective student athletes out there. It didn't sit very well with me, and I had to share some words about it.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't come close to me looking at it. Like, I don't know any student athlete that's smiling and jovial all the way through the day and in life in college. It's not like that. So kind of hit me the wrong way. I'll let you go off that, CJ. Good stuff. Appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me on, sir, and I hope you guys have a great day.
CJ Holmes there with us with The Athletic from the NFL Owners Meetings. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, so we have to go through March Madness from this perspective. Yesterday, I was asked to do a Hot Shots game. Jeff Munn, who does their play-by-play, was tied up with the NCAA on the women's side. So I said, sure, I'd love to do it. I did the Hot Shots game. It was fun. Dale Hellstreet did the game with me. We walked over to a corner bar afterwards with like, I don't know, it was like 2 minutes to go in the Duke game, and the place is going crazy. Central Florida is leading. It looks like they're going to eliminate Duke. I thought the final couple plays, Zion just the refs swallowed their whistle, and if it's a charge in the first half, and Duke gets eliminated, and everybody today is going crazy. It's the end of the Zion Williamson era. Even my wife is getting into watching Zion. She thinks he's a lot of fun to watch, but she also saw Ja Morant. I said, you need to see Morant. He could be the player that the Suns take. It's interesting in that Morant used the NCAA for all the right reasons. When people say, you know, student athlete, the student athletes get hosed all the way through, I agree with about, I don't know, 80, 85% of that. The other side of the coin is Morant used the tournament to impress the NBA, to increase his draft status, to increase his national awareness. He was given a platform through the NCAA that nobody's going to get. Nobody in the math department or the biology department is going to be given the platform that Morant or Zion Williamson were given. That's just a fact. And so there is this side of it of come to college, we're going to get you polished up for the next level, whatever it is in your career. The downside in our society is not very many people are going to get a chance to see the next nuclear physicist on national television on four different networks. It's not going to happen. And so I watch Morant and I watch Zion Williamson, and then I look at our pathetic team here. And of course, there's a little bit of a burst by the Suns. This is how it goes every year. In mid-March, the Suns win games that they're not supposed to. Why is that? Because most mid-March games to teams in the playoff race don't mean a damn. And you're going to say you're taking away from the Suns. Guys, I've seen this roadmap for the last 9 years. Every mid-March, they make a little bit of a spurt, and it's, oh, we finally turned the corner. And then what do you know? Teams start to see the finish line, and what do? They pound the Suns into submission. And so I don't know if they're any closer. I don't. I know that when I see names like John Paxson and Kevin McHale to be the next general manager of the Suns, you got to be bleeping kidding me. You know, you might as well just give James Jones the job now. You sign Jimmer Fredette. What does Jimmer Fredette do at this point of the season? Well, it puts a little bit of buzz in. But more importantly to me, it says that Robert Sarver, and there may be all sorts of ulterior motives behind the signing of Jimmer Fredette. There may be. It's jersey sales. It's appealing to a mass. It's this. It's that. It has nothing to do with basketball. Robert is about making money. When it comes to Morant or Zion Williamson, though, if the Suns are in that position, I mean, the conspiracy theorist in me says it will be the Knicks picking one and the Lakers picking two. Morant will go to one. Williamson will go to the other. And then the Suns will be left sitting there at three, and they're going to get some dude. All right? The NBA already did them a solid by getting the DeAndre Ayton, and DeAndre Ayton's just a big, tall dude who can play a little bit. He's not a polished player. If we're just talking strictly basketball, to me, and everybody's going to have a different opinion on this, if the Suns were to have the number one overall pick, based on what I've seen in the NCAA tournament, I'll be the first to admit, I did not sit and watch every Murray State game. I saw a lot of Duke because Duke gets shoved down our throats. But I've seen enough of Morant to say, wow, there's a player that will put balls in guys' hands for easy shots. He sees the court differently. He steps back. Does he remind me of Steph Curry? Sure. You see some similarities. But I hate just saying, oh, yeah, he's the next Steph Curry. I don't know that. You don't know that. Does it hype Suns fans up? If I'm going to get Suns fans all hyped up, you get Morant, and you put him alongside of Devin Booker, and then you have Josh Jackson, and then you have DeAndre Ayton, and this will be like the Warriors, and we're going to go on a long 10-year run. Ta-da! Easy to do. You take Zion Williamson, and then you take a whole bunch of these players, and you go find a point guard, and you go trade for a point guard. Problem with that is, Suns have never been able to trade for anything of real value at a big position. Kelly Oubre has been a nice pickup. Kelly Oubre is not a star player. This team lacks star players. Devin Booker scored 32 the other night on 29 shots. That's not good. But D-Book got 32. Yeah, he shot the hell out of the ball because there's no one else on this team that can shoot. Not a good blueprint. if it's me sitting here today and I had the number one, number two picks, obviously I need to see more of Morant and level of competition. You have to have your medical guys walk him through and say, okay, in 5 years, he's going to have X, Y, or Z. We can't spend a first-round pick on him. Zion Williamson's 18. This is crazy to see him at 18 years of age throwing guys around and taking over games with the way that he did with such ease at times in the weekend. The North Dakota State game, it was just like this flip. The switch was flipped during a timeout. And it was dunk, missed free throw, follow-up dunk, spin move inside, block shot, run the court, chase down a loose ball from a guard. That play in its own right was one of the best plays I've ever seen. North Dakota State, he chases down the ball from a guard, dribbles behind his back, composes himself, lays it up and in. Not many people can do that. LeBron James, probably one of the few people when we saw him in high school that could do it. So, Eric, if you're watching, you watch this.
This is pretty clear-cut for me. And I tend to agree with you. I think that I definitely think that the Suns are going to get screwed on this. So I would say,
when you say they're going to get screwed, they're not going to get one or two.
Correct. But but if the Suns have the number one pick, it's pretty easy. It's Zion.
It's Zion.
And if the Suns have the number two pick, it's Ja Morant. I mean, I think the drop-off after Zion to Ja Morant is pretty significant. I think Zion is one of those once every generation type talent because he's just a freak. But if the Suns sit there at two and they get Ja Morant, I'll be really excited because that dude is a baller.
Okay, so they passed on a guard already this last time around, and Dallas looks like they're pretty smart for making the decisions that they made. You can't find your way into talking yourself into Morant and just saying, okay, now we have the point guard.
No.
Okay, so then,
I wouldn't, but.
Well, but then you take Zion, that means instantaneously you're able to trade a whole bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think that they would be able to navigate their way into a deal. You would think.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't get the first or second pick, if the Lakers get Ja Morant in Los Angeles alongside LeBron James, if the Lakers have Zion alongside LeBron James.
Don't say it, please.
And we know that this is how pro sports works this way. Like, I don't think it was any coincidence at all that Rob Gronkowski's retirement gets leaked out the day after Robert Kraft saying, I'm sorry. I don't think there's any way. Nobody can convince me that this wasn't scripted out by some PR people in New York City in a boardroom.
Oh, especially if you saw the latest today. The agent says, well, I mean, he's retired for now, but you never know. There's a chance.
So, you know.
Yeah, he's retired, but dot, dot, dot.
So you can tie it across all platforms in sports that the NBA, I think, and if you say, well, the Suns got lucky last year, well, maybe DeAndre Ayton's not a generational player. Maybe it's just like, you know what? They were the worst team, and they were.
Because all the odds have changed now. I mean, all three, if you're one of the three worst teams, it doesn't matter if you're the worst team or the third worst team, you all have the same odds of winning the lottery.
Right.
Last year, it was skewed in the Suns' direction. So.
Well, and they've screwed up by, I mean, I know what you're saying, but they've screwed up, in my opinion, by winning some games.
Of course they have.
They've screwed up by giving, again, the false hope. And there's people inside that building that are just like, look at us. We're turning it around. And you haters. And you're the, no, we're not hating. You guys just blow.
Yeah, let's go back to November and December when you just couldn't win a game to save your life. Teams are actually playing for something.
There. No, that's right. They get out to a quick start and then they kind of coast. But do you agree with me that if I see those two players, and again, now it's, you have James Jones, it's at the controls at least today with Robert, the puppet strings over him. John Paxson, Kevin McHale. I mean,
so
really?
So uninspired by those two names.
And Robert just can't bring it on himself to say David Griffin with Eddie Johnson. You just can't bring, you just can't suck it up enough to say, I'm going to get a guy in house who's applied in the past in EJ, who knows agents, who knows his way around. And David Griffin, who built it all up. You just can't swallow it, can you? You can't get out of the way and say, I'm going to disappear. I am going to go to Italy every October all the way through April, and then I'll come back. It's just maddening. All right, a couple more thoughts before we get out of here from the NFL owners meetings. And A few things from the weekend. That's next. I'm Brad Sismat. So I did a Hot Shots game yesterday. I did the play-by-play on radio. I was approached about this back in February. They'd asked Jeff Munn to do the games. He had some conflicts, and they just called and said, because we've been supporting him here on the football show, so would you ever be interested in doing a game or two? I said, sure. That'd be fine. I try to stay sharp on my play-by-play because you just never know. I didn't apply for the job. There's not jobs out there that I've gone after. If there's an opening at a play-by-play position here in Phoenix, and there hasn't been one in a long, long, long time, I think that bug, that itch, I've kind of scratched it. And I kind of scratch it just by doing games. Because you don't want to you don't want to be a play-by-play guy for a guy that's not committed to winning. And right now in town, that's happened over on the basketball side. And there's just good people. You know, the radio spots are all filled with good people. So you know, I did the game yesterday, and the Hot Shots won. They beat San Diego. The Hot Shots fill a void, but they are one of the least attended markets in the Alliance. And so that's a double-edged sword. Eric, of course, is a season ticket holder. So I'm doing the game. I should have said, hey, down in section 132, I see four people. And Eric, can you give me a thumbs up? What'd you think yesterday? Because it looks like I'm going to do another game. They're talking to me about doing a game against San Antonio.
Good performance by the Shots. I mean, I should be a Hot Shots insider. I've been to all the games. I watch most of the road games.
Who's their best player?
Their best player is Will Sutton. You've heard of him.
Rashad Ross, pretty good. He got hurt.
Will Sutton is their best player. But yeah, Rashad Ross is good.
Who's the most impactful player
here?
Will Sutton.
Probably Presley, the running back.
Yeah, Jarrell Presley.
Jarrell Presley, he's very good.
So there were more people there yesterday than what I expected. Let's paint a picture for this. It's Sunday afternoon in March in Arizona. And actually, I was talking to Dale Helster on the broadcast about this. Yesterday was the first ever professional football game in March played outdoors in the history of Arizona sports.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, we did it. It was kind of fun.
So the USFL was not a spring league?
I don't believe so.
I don't remember.
I don't believe so. Someone will correct us on this.
I don't remember.
I felt like from what I saw the first week to where it is now, marked improvement. San Diego was not very good, if not for a blown play by the defense and a guy celebrating a little early. It would have just been a one-score game. If not for a muff punt, it would have been
right.
You know, a shutout. But nonetheless, do you think, so they have one home game left. Next week they're in San Antonio. Then they're home for Birmingham. Then they finish regular season at San Diego. If they make the playoffs, do you think there's 20,000 there? 30,000 there?
No.
It's still going to be, yesterday they announced 8?
Yeah. There might be 12,000, I would guess.
So you don't think this is resonating with the fans?
Tickets are just not priced to sell to a new brand. I think they got out in front of their skis a little bit on pricing the tickets because
it's too much.
I think so.
Yeah.
Because when you have something new, you want to get people there and then show off your product and then sort of establish a ticket price.
So like rising.
I think the Hot Shots were like, well, we can, it's football and people love football and the weather's going to be good and there's going to be intrigue. So let's jack up the price of tickets and then we'll just figure out the other stuff later. When you get there, the games are fun. I mean, I love the fact that the games, as you saw, like the games are 2 hours and 40 minutes. It's almost like,
and that was a slow game yesterday, actually. It was a slow game,
yeah, but I love standards. It. I mean, you know, like the game started at 1 and I was home by 4:20 in my house by 4:20.
I was watching Zion completely run over a Central Florida player by 3:40.
And yeah. I think the players care, and I think
I'd agree.
You see, like last night, one of the worst teams beat one of the best teams, and I think that's good for the league. I mean, you're not going to have an 0-10 team, and I think the balance of the league is good. And it's, I don't know. I hope it sticks around. I don't know if it will, but I hope.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. All right, so the Suns play tonight. The Coyotes crap the bed. They've not won a game. The Coyotes have won a game since March 14th. They play the Blackhawks tomorrow night, but they're still in the playoff spot. And we're coming down to just a couple of weeks left for them and our beloved hometown heroes on the basketball court that have not had a playoff game since May 29th of 2010. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. He is the Iron Man. Eric Sorensen, as always, produces. Jordan Hamm, Devin Henry, cast of thousands. Appreciate their help. Have yourself a great day.